You need to take advantage of the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier 3-Pack. Everyone loves the Thunderstorm. It doesn't take up any floor space, there are no filters to replace, and it's only one-third the cost of those big, bulky air purifiers. Go to EdenPureDeals.com and use discount code Howie.
The numbers are in. Listeners are voting often and early for Grace Curley, just like they did for her adopted grandfather. From year one to number one.
Make it so, number one.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald, the Spectator, and the Daily Mail.
You got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice, Grace Curley.
Now, live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, the millennial with the mic, the Grace Curley Show.
Especially Grace, stand up.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. I can't believe it's already 2 o'clock on this beautiful Friday afternoon, but we still have a lot more show for you, so don't go anywhere. I wanted to start off before I go back to the calls with an update from the Big Apple. You know what, Jared? Since I've been off for a couple days, can I get myself a little bit of music here, please? Can I get me some ambiance?
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today.
According to the New York Post, New York City hospitals are spending more than $9 million to house migrants in Midtown hotels. So we've all heard about the Watson. Well, it turns out there's going to be more hotels joining in on this. The Big Apple's public hospital system plans to spend more than $90 million to house migrants in 4 Midtown Manhattan hotels through the spring in response to President Biden's border crisis. NYC Health and Hospital CEO Mitchell Katz has approved $40 million in payments to the 4-Star Row, New York City, which we've heard that's where the sex was happening in the stairwells, allegedly, and $28 million to the 4-Star Stewart Hotel across the street from Madison Square Garden. Now, $20 million is going to the Watson, and $5.8 million to the historic Walcott Hotel on West 31st Street. The planned $93.8 million in spending by H&H follows an October 13th agreement for the hospital system to manage and operate what Mayor Eric Adams calls migrant humanitarian response and relief centers.
Is this for housing for the migrants, or is this for medical treatments for them? So are they basically like renting out hospital rooms as lodging?
No, the hospitals are spending the money on these hotels.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense to me. Are we not worried about overwhelming the system anymore?
Well, it would make sense why you're confused, because Adams, according to the New York Post, has refused to detail his spending on the migrant crisis. So again, this is becoming a theme now with Democrats, as they like to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on things, but they don't want to show you what they're spending the money on. They like to leave it vague.
I thank God I'm the mayor right now.
Let's go to the callers here. Gardner, you're next up on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Gardner.
Hey, Grace, happy Friday to you. I love your Friday Junior comments all the time, but Friday is pretty stinking awesome. And much love to you and all yours from everybody up here in this fine estate in southern New Hampshire. And I just have to say, when you brought up the absolute falsehoods of what Kamala Harris had said, it reminded me of how false Joe Biden's claims about the economy were when he gave the State of the Union. But even her claim about, oh, we did all these wonderful things so that a family could get a new appliance, like a washer. They have continued to impose massive tariffs against foreign-made, even the washers. They make more expensive for people to be able to buy. You can't believe anything these people tell you. It's no wonder people are starting to be a little bit more skeptical about the narrative about Ukraine and how much cash the United States continues to push in there, contrary to the Constitution. There's virtually nothing I've heard from these people that is actually believable.
Yeah, and Gardner, thank you for the call, because you just brought up a couple of things. Joe Biden in the State of the Union was being delusional about the state of our economy, and he was lying about it. That's what he's doing. Kamala Harris recently, and this is the cut that Gardner is referring to. Let's play this again, Jared. This is cut 14, please.
Every day, Joe Biden and I talk about and work together with our partners
like former leader Hoyer, current leader Hoyer, to lower the cost for the people of our nation, because you are a leader, for working families. We have reduced heating and electricity bills, so folks have more money in their pocket to buy things like school supplies, replace the dishwasher, or take a family vacation.
Hold on a second. Can I get a fact check? Whose heating bills or electric bills have gone down since Joe Biden's been president? Show me that person. I want to know who that person is, and I want to know what they're doing. I want to know their secret. Unless you just haven't turned the lights on in your home since Joe Biden entered office in January of 2021, then I don't really understand how that works. And Gardner was talking about her comment on appliances, but I think the wackier one is people going on vacation. Like, oh yeah, this economy has been so great. The people are now taking more vacations than they used to.
I went off script a little bit.
To quote one of my favorite writers from Red State, Jennifer Oliver O'Connell, what are you smoking and why aren't you sharing? I mean, this is fantasy land. This is, I do appreciate how she mentions the school supplies, though. Because
stay off the weed.
I think Kamala Harris, and Dagan was saying this on Fox, that she, when she talks about Venn diagrams, she explains them like she's talking to children. I think she would have been a good kindergarten, first grade teacher. She has a very amiable way about her, very affable. She's very happy. And she likes to talk to us like we're 5 years old. And every time she talks, that age gets younger. Like, she used to talk to us like we were maybe 12. And then she did the YouTube video with the paid child actors about the moon craters, and then we dropped to like maybe 9. Now we're at 5. Now she's talking to us like we're 5 years old. And she... Look at that bus! She loves school supplies, Venn diagrams, electric school buses. Am I the only one who thinks she missed her calling? It's definitely not being vice president. I can tell you that right now. By the way, before we go to the Pete Buttigieg sound, and we do have to play this, it's important that we get to this. I just want to mention there was a piece in Politico this week talking about how Joe Biden, you know, in his classic way of being indecisive, might not run for president. I don't think it's true, but I do think it was put in there for a reason. I just can't figure out yet why. I can't figure out who wanted that in there and why. But one of the funny parts of the piece was that it's going to put a, if he decides to pull out of this, it's going to put a lot of attention on Kamala Harris. And I was thinking about it and I was like, most VPs, if you've ever watched the show Veep, most VPs would be pumped if there was an 80-year-old president and then he stepped aside in time for the election, and you'd be a shoo-in, at least for the nomination. You know, you'd be a shoo-in in your own party. In the case of Kamala, I don't know. I think she might be at this point hoping he does run. Because if it falls to her, I don't think she's a shoo-in. And I don't think people are going to treat her like a shoo-in. I don't think other Democrats, they'll stand aside and pay deference to Joe. But I don't think they won't even pay deference to Kamala as far as her getting on the ticket. When Elizabeth Warren was asked about her being VP, she kind of was beating around the bush. She didn't sound like she was throwing her support behind Harris. So if he happens to not run, I think it would be so funny to see what would happen, because the knives would be out at the DNC. It would be crazy. I think Bernie would definitely run. I think he'd be there fast. I think Hillary might run. The possibilities are endless. Okay, though, we got to play this Pete Buttigieg sound. It's very important. I want to start with the sound where he blames Donald Trump, which is the last refuge of a scoundrel. Let's play cut 6, please.
One thing he could do is express support for reversing the deregulation that happened on his watch. I heard him say he had nothing to do with it, even though it was in his administration. So if he had nothing to do with it, and they did it in his administration against his will, maybe he could come out and say that he supports us moving in a different direction. We're not afraid to own our policies when it comes to raising the bar on regulation. And I've got to think that him indicating that this is something that everybody, no matter how much you disagree on politics and presidential campaigns, can get behind, higher fines, tougher regulations on safety.
I've heard enough. First of all, Wizard of Oz alert. There's a lot of Oz in there. Second of all,
I lost my train of thought.
You've been the Secretary of Transportation for 2.5 years now. If you're so proud of your policies that raise the bar on regulation, then why don't your policies raise the bar on regulation? That's just a question right there. Also, not a great look. Not a great look to be going to East Palestine, where all of these people just welcome Trump with open arms. I mean, they couldn't have been more excited to see him lining the streets. And then you show up the next day, kind of smarmy, bitter, glass-jawed, and complaining about the guy who's no longer president. Weak sauce from Pete Buttigieg. For such a smart guy, he's acting pretty dumb. I don't care how many Harvard degrees you have. I guess it doesn't teach you common sense, because this does not look good. Let's go to Lou. You're up next on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Lou.
Yeah, how you doing, Grace? First of all, I've got a couple points. I want to talk about Pete, but I was so happy to see that they left the Raoul Dahl's books intact, the publishers did, because you can still use the term ugly and beastly. And when I heard about Joy Behar's comments, that's exactly what I thought. I'm so glad they left those terms in the book, ugly and beastly. Anyway, the other thing about Pete is that he says there's been 1,000 train derailments per year, right?
Right.
Hello?
Yeah, you know, yeah, you're right.
1,000 train derailments. Okay. And he's had, so in 2 years in office, 2,000 train derailments, and they haven't changed the regulations.
Right.
And he blames Trump.
Right, he was on.
Something wrong with the logic here.
Yeah, exactly. So he's on TV and he's saying, "Oh, you know, this isn't that big." Although this has gotten a lot of attention, you might not know that there's actually 1,000 train derailments a year. And Lou is absolutely right. Everybody's response was like, "So what are you doing about that? Are you proud of that? Shouldn't you be working on that? What are we missing?" But the better part, Lou, is that when he goes to blame Trump when he's in East Palestine, which I'm telling you, there's no appetite for that. There's no appetite in East Palestine, Ohio, for this guy who's done diddly squat to come in and start blaming Donald Trump. A person who, based off the McDonald's orders and based off the trucks full of water and the signs and the energy, people like Donald Trump in East Palestine a lot more than they like Pete Buttigieg. But beyond that, he tries to blame Donald Trump and he gets debunked again by the head of the NTSB, that would be Jennifer Homendy. Can I have a cut 11?
Well, and the NTSB has looked at electronically controlled pneumatic braking for a number of years, and we did some testing as well. Certainly it would improve safety, but for this investigation and for this derailment, ECP brakes would not have prevented the derailment. The wheel bearing failed on car number 23, so even with ECP brakes, the derailment would have occurred, the fire would have ensued, and the 5 vinyl chloride tank cars would still have to be vented and burned.
Now, she's on with CNN. She was on CNN with Jay Tapper, who I'm sure was trying to set her up for like a, but we can kind of blame Trump for this, right? And this woman won't relent. She keeps debunking the debunkers. Which leads me to my next question. How much longer does Jennifer Homendy have at this position? Because she's a thorn in their side right now. This is their only thing left, is we can pin this on Donald Trump. And this one woman, God bless her, is not making it easy. But then you have people like Joy Behar who come in and blame Trump and actually blame the residents of East Palestine for what happened in Ohio. We'll get to that when we come back. 844-500-4242. A lot of great calls today. Really appreciate it. We'll take more of them on the other side. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Nothing like a little Jackson 5 on a Friday. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. 844-500-4242. Before we go back to the calls, today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is brought to you by Rizzo Insurance. When was the last time you had your insurance audited? Rizzo saved one of my coworkers over $1,700. To get your insurance audited, go to RizzoInsurance.com. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Are you watching the Murdaugh trial? Yes, the whole thing, no, none of it, or I'll watch parts here and there.
I will watch parts here and there, and I am going to, I think I'm going to finish the Netflix docuseries on the whole ordeal, because it is kind of complicated and twisted and weird, so I'll probably finish that.
15% say they'll watch parts here and there, 3% say they'll watch the whole thing, and 82% say they will not watch any of it.
And again, you can go to gracecurlyshow.com to vote. Oftentimes I'll put out the poll question, Jared, on Twitter. I'll get all these responses from people. They're telling me their answer, and that's wonderful. Love it. Love the feedback. But you got to go online to vote. Otherwise, it won't count. So go to gracecurlyshow.com and vote. Let's go to Zebra, who's up next. Go ahead, Zebra.
Well, I really like your show, and you do a great job, but you're embarking on the most important lasting job in the world, and that's raising the next generation. So good luck, and I know that you're going to be a great mom, because nobody slides anything by you. So good luck to all those people that might come to your door to see your child, because they're going to have to pass the gauntlet. But I've got to keep us updated too. We need the curly pregnancy updates on a regular basis, because we're all wishing you well. Hey, on Pete Buttigieg, nobody thinks for a second that he would have shown up if Donald Trump wasn't there first, and they were trying to leave it a good leaving alone, hope it would go away or something else would hit the radar. But and maybe Taylor knows this. Am I imagining, or did he substitute the word imitate instead of intimate when he said Donald Trump imitated that it was his fault?
Or I don't know. I'd have to re-listen to it again, Zebra, and I'm not sure if I can.
Yeah, Taylor probably caught it. He's sharp like that. But I think he used the word imitate. For a Harvard guy, not knowing the words, showing up late, I don't think that he's going to. The last guy in is not the guy you respect. It's always the first people in, the people that are the first responders, not the tail end of the parade. Everyone's gone by then.
Yeah, so, and Zebra, I want to comment on something you just said, because it's also about the intention, and I think that that's what people have a problem with, is that you can feel that the intention behind Pete Buttigieg going there is that he's playing catch up, or that he has to go because Trump now gave him no choice. And that's really a disturbing thing when you look at what those people are going through. You should be there because it's your job and you feel responsible and you feel the need to be there with those people. And anyone who had any shame, and I wrote this in a column, it got edited out and I was kind of annoyed, but I wrote, if Pete Buttigieg had any shame, he would resign, which means he's not going anywhere, because clearly this man is shameless. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk to Justin Manning all about real estate. A lot of times people give me their questions after the fact. Text them in now and I'll ask Justin. 617-213-1066. And we will be right back.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. I'm very excited to be joined by Justin Manning from JJ Manning Auctioneers. He's going to talk with us all about the real estate market, which, if you've been following this, it's confusing. Everyone has a different take on it. And I actually threw it out to the listeners. I said, if you have any questions for Justin, you can text in to 617-213-1066. Start the text with the word curly. I already have a few good ones that I'm going to read to Justin in just a moment. But before we do that, Justin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Grace. And there's no way, no one can predict. COVID reset the button for anyone to predict anything about everything. So you can't anymore. But we look at the data and rates keep going up. but prices are holding in some markets. But then you'll see a for sale sign go back up on a house that was sold, and now it's back for sale. So it's just a weird time where we are truly in between mid-tide again. This is like the third mid-tide moment we've had in the past couple of years. So I think I'm done predicting.
You're done predicting. That's okay, Justin, because we don't want predictions. We want facts, and that's what you bring us. I wanted to start, though, with a story that is very important that's happening here in Boston, and that would be Mayor Wu's rent control plan. She's already getting a lot of pushback from this. Boston.com has an article that says real estate industry begins campaign against Mayor Wu's rent control plan. As someone in the real estate industry, explain to people what this would mean for people in Boston and why you think it's either a great idea or a terrible idea.
All right. Well, understand that back in 1994, the people of Massachusetts voted down rent control. Now, there still was a couple of exceptions, I think, in Brookline and Cambridge back in the day. And the reason they voted it down is because it doesn't work. And this particular proposal now, the funny thing about it is neither side likes it at all. The advocates and those that are against it, they want stiffer limits and they don't want exemptions. And the other side doesn't want it at all. They want a free market system. So when you think about it, if there's not enough places for people to live, then if you want to really stifle development and the building of more and multiple more units, then implement rent control now, because now you're going to have developers that back away from a potential plan that they had because of that new oversight. And on the other side, the advocates say you're not doing enough, because new buildings that are built will have a 15-year exemption, so they don't want that. If you are an owner and you're in a six unit or less size multifamily, those are exempt. So the advocates want no exemptions, and the builders and developers are saying, I'm going to go somewhere else. First you do the millionaire's tax, and now you're doing rent control. Like, I'm going somewhere else. I'm going to Florida, New Hampshire, wherever the hell they're going to go.
And when I read about rent control and you read about Mayor Wu's plan and you kind of go at it from the perspective of people who think it's a good idea, oftentimes the narrative, Justin, is that the tenants are the victims and the landlords are, you know, the evil monsters who are taking advantage of them. Is that true, though? Because in a lot of cases, I think that some landlords are put in really tricky situations and it's not necessarily fair to them either.
Yeah, and to that point, Grace, what ends up happening is if they're able to continue on and receive market rents as the inflation and CPI goes up, if they're able to continue to move along with that as they need to, then they can reinvest it back into the properties. And if you cap that, now what you might see is properties, not newer ones, but older properties that become eyesores, that become more decrepit, where things are breaking down because the money doesn't get reinfused back into it. I mean, there may be some landlords that are terrible, but I think a lot of them, the one piece people don't understand is that a lot of the money has to go back into the maintenance, the ongoing care and maintenance of these properties. I mean, think of what you put into your own house as a homeowner. I just had to replace a well pump. It cost me a couple grand that I didn't expect. That's the type of thing that, you know, reinfusion to keep the real estate that we've got out there and the apartments that we have out there up to a livable and habitable level. And the rent control could have an inverse effect with that.
I'm speaking with Justin Manning, who is very knowledgeable on all these things, and he's from J.J. Manning Auctioneers, and we have a lot of questions from people, but I'm still just going to keep control of this mic for one more second here, Justin, because I read an article today, and a lot of times with friends my age, this is just anecdotal, but this is what I've experienced, people in their early 30s, a lot of my friends want to get into the housing market, and they have certain towns in mind, and they're kind of, I think it puts them at a disadvantage, but they're kind of stuck on certain towns they want to live in, which is fine. And they're going to wait and they're going to try to get it. But when they go to put a bid in on a house, they'll oftentimes tell me, you know, it's crazy. Like the other person who was bidding on the house was $200,000 over asking in cash. And the way they feel is, I have no shot. I don't know where these people are coming from that have all this money and can just kind of beat everyone out from the beginning. Then I read a story today from NBC News, and it said absentee owners are crowding the housing market. And it talks about how secondary home and investment property buyers are a rising share of home buyers in many major cities. And experts say the effect these deep-pocketed shoppers are having in housing markets is muscling out first-time home buyers. Tell us a little bit about that and if you've seen that around this area.
Definitely. What ends up happening, Grace, is instead of a house being a home for someone, homes and houses are now at financial assets. They're like, instead of a Bitcoin, it's a house. And I actually read an article maybe a month or so ago that talked about some large hedge funds and investment companies looking to buy up large portfolios of single-family homes because they have continued to appreciate at such an extreme level that it's a nice asset for them to hold, whether they end up renting them or selling them or just sitting on them. I mean, think about it. People that have owned a single-family home in the last couple of years, even if it's empty and you're not even using it, it's probably grown better than most of your other investments. So homes have become chips that are being held on to by maybe someone that doesn't even live there. It's an interesting phenomenon. Like you said, the supply is still so low, and that's why when we have the auctions that we do, that competitive side of it is still on fire because there's nothing out there. So the assets that we're selling, the competition is higher than in a down market for sure.
Now, my next question kind of coincides with this conversation, and it's from a texter who said, how long do you have to live in your current house to sell it as your primary residence?
So my understanding, according to IRS rules, I believe it's 2 years, but I think, you know, people need to look into that there because I've heard different exceptions, Grace, to the point where does the 2 years have to be consecutive or does it have to be 2 years over 5 years? So there is definitely IRS rules and regs that relate to that, and people are going to want to be very cognizant of that. Because there is, you know, you definitely want to be able to know what your capital gain liability would be, and you definitely need to be in there for a chunk of time. Whether it's consecutive or not, I don't know the answer on that, and I think that can be a different answer depending on where you live.
And Justin, this is kind of a specific example, but I have a question, and it's a friend of mine who's going through this. So she's her family's growing. And the current place that she owns is very small, and it's too small for her family. So she wants to get out, and she has a baby on the way. But she hasn't found anything she likes. And so my question is, in a case like that, are you better off just going somewhere and renting while you try to find, maybe not your dream house, but a house that you could stay in for a couple of years? Or are you better off selling your property and buying one, even if you don't love it, just so you don't get stuck in the cycle of renting, which a lot of people consider like flushing your money down the drain?
I think that it's still a seller's market right now. So I think if someone has a house and they don't plan that they want to be there, if they could sell it and I have a better option, tell them to move into their parents' basement. So then if they can get that permission, because then they won't have to pay what's probably a fairly high rent because of people hoarding all these houses, and now it's making the rents even hotter than they were before. So I think the ideal play is go on your hands and knees to mom and dad and say, could I move into above the garage or can I move into the basement? And I'll promise I'll try to find something in a couple of years. Or, you know, you could rent. But unfortunately, when you rent, now you've lost out on any real write-off from your tax perspective. You don't have, you know, that, you know, 10 grand in mortgage interest per year. You know, you're going to lose out on that. So I think that it is a seller's market. I think I would tell them sell now and rent, or sell now and move in with mom and dad if you can, who are probably a good babysitter as well from time to time. And that's the play, because we are seeing, Grace, remember, the Fed is going to raise the interest rate a few more times. We're going to get up there a little bit more, and it's going to keep creating a pinch, and it's going to create a little bit more availability of product out there because it's still extremely low right now, and it doesn't make sense, but it is.
Now, Justin, another person was texting in and asking, and this kind of flips what you were just saying, but there is this trend that more parents are moving in with their adult children. So rather than the narrative we typically hear, which is kids moving back home with their parents. There's a trend happening about parents moving in with their adult children. We have a texter wondering if you have any thoughts on what that is about.
So I think, depending on the age of the kids, I think once one parent passes away, I mean, I lost my dad 8 years ago, and I think that when one parent all of a sudden passes away, then there's a great opportunity to kind of have a renaissance with mom or dad and work it out in either direction. And then a lot of people that maybe are a little bit more wealthy understand that that's the time to start doing estate planning and start to create an irrevocable trust and set up some things that where it works for both sides, where the kid and the dog can be watched by Nana or Papa. And conversely, you can assist them and give them company and support. And I think it's fantastic. And I really think it can work in both directions.
Yeah.
I don't mean to be biased in one direction because it most certainly can go in both directions. I think maybe our generation is done a little bit better with investing maybe than the prior who just worked their butts off and maybe didn't have the expertise or the tutelage to know how to invest. And so that's a nice thing to hear.
And Justin, you know, it makes me think of, and I've had this conversation before with my parents about in-law apartments and kind of the value of those. Are you seeing that more where people are really looking at that, an in-law suite, and thinking this would be good down the line? This is something that we'd like to have?
Yeah, hugely. I'm on a board at a bank on the Cape, and one of the meetings 2 weeks ago, the discussion had to do with ancillary units for two reasons. One, because of the need of workforce housing, and then just the need for housing in general. And so what you're finding is living above the garage, being able to build, you know, something more than a she shed out back that could be a studio apartment for someone. There's town by town, and I'm just speaking to the Cape only because that was my recent knowledge. Town by town, they're working on trying to get the towns to agree more easily to allow for ancillary apartments and additional units, whatever that means, above the garage, in the basement, in a converted outbuilding or shed, or one that could be constructed. So that's the next thing, because they're not making any more of Massachusetts, and it's a small state. And, you know, in order to be able to house all the people that want to live here, even though we've lost 110,000 residents in the last 3 years, it seems like it's still growing for other reasons. So it's something that needs to happen in a lot of places.
Thank you so much, Justin Manning. We really appreciate this conversation, and you were able to hit so many different topics. If anyone wants to check out JJ Manning Auctioneers, you can go to jjmanning.com, and you can talk to Justin, and you can talk to some of the wonderful people they have working there. He's very knowledgeable, and he always does a great job on the show. Justin, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Grace. Appreciate it.
Now, we're talking about the economy, and we've been discussing that, and inflation is at a 40-year high. Like I always say, despite what you might hear in the mainstream media and from Joe Biden. But that's why you need to take advantage of the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier 3-pack. Yeah, we're talking about the 3-pack here. This is a really great deal. You don't just get one for your kitchen. You can get one for your kitchen, one for your bedroom, maybe give one to a friend. It's always nice to give a gift to somebody, especially if they listen to this show. They might be hemming and hawing about it. This is a way to get them involved. And I'm telling you right now, they're going to love it because this is a small, compact product. Does not take up a lot of space, does not require air filters, does not require work or extra attention. You just plug it in and you let it do its thing. And what is its thing? It's going to purify and clean the air. It's going to keep the air fresh. It's going to get rid of any smells, any odors. And if you're in your bedroom and you tend to wake up with that dry desert air feeling, it's going to eliminate that too. So this is really a multi-use product. And the best part is you're getting three of them. So go to EdenPureDeals.com, put in code GRACE at checkout. What I also love, I just want to make mention here, free shipping. I mean, for me, free shipping is just the cherry on top of this. You're getting three Eden Pure Thunderstorms, free shipping, and a great deal, all with code. This is the key. The code is GRACE, G-R-A-C-E. We've had thousands of satisfied customers buy the 3-pack. They love it. So all you have to do is go to EdenPureDeals.com, code GRACE. That's EdenPureDeals.com, code GRACE. We'll be right back with the captain. Don't go anywhere.
Grace Curley is your perfect lunch day.
Bread, $2 extra.
$2, but everyone in front of me got free bread.
You want bread?
Yes, please.
$3!
What?
No soup for you!
This is the Grace Curley Show.
Global unrest is battering the food supply chain and the energy markets, and it's incumbent on you to be prepared. So get ready with ReadyWise. Go to ReadyWise.com and use code Howie15 to get 15% off your next purchase. Joining us now is Howie Carr. Howie, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Grace.
Now, Howard, Kamala Harris is parroting Joe Biden's talking point that since she's been on the scene, everything's gotten less expensive. As someone who talks about this once a week in Let's Go Brandon, or Thank You Brandon, do you agree with this assessment of the economy?
We played that cut yesterday on the show, and it just kind of took over the show for about an hour and a half. You know, I mean, people are just so angry about it. She specifically talked about, heating and electricity prices, and all these stories are out today that those prices are up 25%. 25%. I think that's a low ball estimate. And then the inflation report comes out today, the initial inflation report. It's worse than ever. And guess what? All the downgrades that they had a month or 2 months ago, they're all being revised, and they're all being revised upward, Grace. Have you ever noticed how that always happens?
That's why it's always unexpected, because they expect such great things.
They have a big headline with good news, and then when they revise it downward the next month, it's like the last paragraph in the story. Doesn't rate a headline, and who gets to the last paragraph to read it anyway?
But Howie, one thing I noticed too is in that clip by Kamala Harris that you played yesterday, she talks about how people are going on vacations and buying appliances. Whenever I listen to your segment, Thank You, Brandon, if people are talking about how they can't buy eggs, how they can't fill up their gas tanks, how like the products they used to like, they had to cut back on because they can't afford it. Who's talking about vacations and appliances? What world is she living in?
I know. The Domino's Pizza just issued their quarterly report yesterday. It's in the Wall Street Journal, and they say that their sales were down because people have stopped buying pizzas. Because that's how much they're hurting for money. And, one thing I mentioned yesterday, it was from our Let's Go Brandon segment. Someone said, I bought a half dozen eggs for the first time ever. And then I got a couple of emails from friends of mine who said, yeah, we were dirt poor in the 70s. And I remember my mother buying a half dozen eggs. And he said, I haven't gone back to that far yet, but I know some people that I work with that are getting to that very close to that point. A half dozen eggs.
Yeah, it's a sad. Well, this is called Build Back Better, Howie, and you better get used to it. Howie Carr is coming up next. He's got a great Friday show planned. We will be back with you on Monday, and we can't wait to see you then. Have a great weekend, everybody.